But we claim this is the best presentation. You read it and judge for yourself of this conflict that happened at that time. A few years ago, Dr. Bert Thompson took our book on what had happened at the College of the Bible and compared it with what was happening at Abilene Christian University and lectured on that subject at the Denton Lectureships in Denton, Texas. He put on one side what happened at the College of the Bible. He put on the other side what was happening at Abilene Christian College, and he concluded it's just a lie. History is repeating itself. And Abilene, if it doesn't change its direction, will go the way of the College of the Bible. And McAllister and Tucker say in their journeys through faith that the liberals won the battle. They won the victory. And the College of the Bible went with the liberal element of the Christian church and ousted the conservative element of the Christian church. Now the Standard, Christian Standard in Cincinnati, took up the cause of Calhoun and his group. The Christian Evangelist took up the cause of Crossfield and his group, and they fought it out for a number of months following that. Ralph Records, who was chairman of the Department of the Chemistry in Transylvania University, resigned because he said, I'm convinced, even through the hearings at the Board of Trustees, that destructive criticism is being taught and approved in the College of the Bible, and he resigned and went to Bethany College. Calhoun, in the midst of it, quoted McGarvey and Grubbs about the College of the Bible and his reaction to what had gone on. He said that Grubbs and McGarvey said that they would rather see the College of the Bible sunk in the bottom of the ocean than it should become a place where destructive criticism was taught. Calhoun said, it is with a heavy heart that I sever my connections with the school which I have loved better than life itself. But he did resign, and he went to Bethany College, as you know, in 1917, and stayed there until 1919. Now, when Calhoun went to Bethany, Thomas E. Cramblett was the president of Bethany. And in the midst of all of this discussion about destructive criticism and liberalism that was creeping into higher education, Thomas Cramblett announced that as long as he lived, and as long as he was president of Bethany College, that he would have nothing to do with that type of theology. But after 2 years, Cramblett took blood poisoning and died. And so the board then looked to Claude Goodnight for the presidency. Claude Goodnight was a product of the Divinity School in the University of Chicago. He'd been identified while he was there with the Campbell Institute, and so they brought him in and imposed him upon the college as its president. It was not long then until Calhoun began to see in Bethany a movement in the same direction that the College of the Bible had gone. And he saw the Christian church in Bethany moving in the same direction that Central Church in Lexington had moved. And so he decided that he would give up, renounce his affiliation with the Christian church, and resign his position on the faculty of Bethany and return to Tennessee. He came back to Henderson and became co-president with N.B. Hardeman at Freed Hardeman University. And he didn't last but 1 year. Now, you who went to Freed Hardeman University in the time of N.B. Hardeman would wonder how he lasted that long as co-president with Brother Hardeman, because Brother Hardeman was the president and nobody else was co-president with him. And so it lasted a year, and he left and came to Nashville in 1926. He suffered a severe nervous breakdown after he left Henderson and came to Nashville, but with proper care by his family and his friends, he recovered and started preaching at Old Belmont, that still exists here in Nashville. Preached there for a while, and then moved over to the old Central Church and preached at the Central Church and became the radio preacher of that great congregation. Now, he had served as co-president of Freed Hardeman and as the full-time minister of the Henderson Church of Christ. Now, you can imagine at this point in time that Calhoun incurred bitter opposition from his brethren in the Christian church. They opposed him greatly, and they indicted him beyond reproach almost. He finally decided that he would write an article for the Gospel Advocate and titled it, Why I Did It. And he said, in the first place, I simply changed my mind. I don't believe what I one time believed, and I believe differently to what I one time believed. And he said, one of the reasons that I changed my mind, I believe that the American Christian Society is robbing the churches of their autonomy and will eventually destroy the churches as we knew them during New Testament times. And he said instrumental music is corrupting the worship of New Testament Christianity. And he said, I oppose the evolution that has raised its head, and I shall have no further part with it. And so he wound up in Nashville preaching for Belmont and for Central Church and teaching in what was then David Lipscomb College. I believe the results of the conflict at the College of the Bible in 1917 resulted in the division that took place within the Christian church, between the Christian Church Independent, as they style themselves, and the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, as they style themselves. Now, you must remember that the Christian Church adopted the Oregon and the Missionary Society, and in 1906, the Federal Bureau of the Census saw there was so much difference between the Oregon and society people and the non-Oregon and the non-society people that they listed the Christian Church and the Church of Christ separately. David Lipscomb and J.W. Shepherd and others helped North do that, but that was the first division. And then the next division came in 1927. It had fomented in 1917, but in 1927, the conservative element of the Christian Church withdrew and formed the North American Christian Convention. And then the conservatives tried to define themselves for a long time, and eventually in 1968, the International Convention of the Disciples of Christ formed what they call the Provisional Design, which created the Disciples of Christ as a denomination full-fledged in word and deed. And later, international conventions voted to form an ecumenical partnership with the United Churches of Christ. That's where it stands. I would say, without any effort to offend any of the Disciple of Christ historians today, that my problem with the historians of the Disciples of Christ today are that they're trying to rewrite the history of the Restoration Movement. And they're trying to move the Disciples of Christ back farther than the Disciples of Christ can be identified as such. Tony Donovan, who's a good friend of mine, a good friend of Dr. Morgan, is the historian of the Theological Seminary in Lexington, recently wrote the history of the old Central Church there and went back to Main Street and went back to Hill Street. He called me and asked me if he could send me a draft of his book and I would critique it. And I said I would be honored to do so. He sent it to me. I critiqued it carefully. He's a very excellent historian. But I said, Dr. Donovan, you have taken the disciples of Christ back too far. You've taken them back to Hill Street. Disciples of Christ were not at Hill Street. The Christians were at Hill Street with Martin Warren Stone, and not with Alexander Campbell at all. And somebody is going to rise up one of these days and laugh at you for rewriting the history of the Restoration Movement and moving it back with the disciples further than it dare be moved. But let me quit. Two more minutes. Calhoun suffered a heart attack on Wednesday morning, September 4, 1935, following his last radio address the day before. He experienced another attack later that day, and he died at 9 p.m. after suffering his other attack. He was 72 years old when he died. Now, I look back on Calhoun, and when I sang for a meeting and he did the preaching, I thought he's an old man. But here I am, all these years older than Calhoun today when he died. They buried him out here in the memorial, or Woodland Memorial Park, after holding his funeral at the War Memorial Building in Nashville, because that was the only place that could seat the number of people who wanted to go. There his body lies. When his wife died on October the 30, 1953, she was 83 years old, and they buried her beside him. There is Hall Laurie and Mary Etta. Their remains lying side by side out here in Old Woodland Memorial Cemetery, awaiting the time for the voice of God to bring forth from the grave all of those who have died. And they're there now waiting the resurrection. I hope to join them in that resurrection. And I hope to talk to him about some things that I wish I had talked to him about when I knew him upon the earth. Oh, you've been a great audience tonight. I talked a little bit longer than Dr. Morgan did, but I didn't think he talked long after I got through with it, and I hope he hasn't thought that I have talked much longer than he did. Thank you.